Lifeway Leadership Podcast Network.
All right, you guys ready for episode 600?
600 it is. Let the pigeons loose.
Is that, are we recording already? Because like, you didn't even do the introduction. Wow. That Todd,
well, you, that was Todd, my fake
do
intro.
Do you love the introduction?
So you're listening
Todd,
to episode
right on the podcast. Do you love the introduction?
I do not.
Good, because I don't either. Do you listen to my episodes? Because I, to be honest, I don't listen to yours.
No.
Okay, so do you constantly?
I've mistakenly started one before.
But did you quickly turn it off? It's like, oh no, it's Ed Stetzer's voice. I can't handle. I'm triggered.
I'm just joking.
All right. So this is episode 6. This is episode 600 of the New Churches Q&A podcast. New Churches is an online hub for the mission of church multiplication. Here you'll find the resources and training you need to get started, as well as a community of church planting and multi-site experts to help you thrive. Back again.
600.
Woo! Back again.
All three of us. Woo! Party All on!
Three of us. 600. Wow, I still can't believe it.
That's like a lot of... How long have we been doing this podcast?
I don't know, like 5 years.
It's one a week. There's one a week come out. Goodness. So it's got to be 10 years, 60 episodes.
No, it's not 10 years. Ed, I'm here because I do the other half of the podcast.
Yeah, but aren't we like...
No, we started
so
in 2015.
You do one a week and I do one a week. Daniel does two a week.
Are there two a week that go out? So I didn't realize there were two a week that went out. So that means that...
Yeah.
I did. Okay. Yeah. So that's fair. I did know that.
You knew that.
We've been here for 5 years. I mean, it has to be 5 years. Yeah. 5 years. What kind of podcast? 5 years. How many downloads have we had,
5 years.
Daniel?
Yeah. Oh, I mean, it's been a little bit, but last time I checked, it was like 1.3.
Yeah, 1.7 million, you know, just a few downloads. So think of all the advice that how many lives have been changed because of Todd's wisdom and insight, because not mine, because I'm, you know.
And wrecked.
Yes, exactly. And wrecked. Many wrecked lives. Well, actually, you'd be shocked at how many people come up to me and start a conversation with, "Hey, I want you to know you ruined my life." And I'm like, what in the world? I was at this seminar where you were speaking on church planting. I never thought about it. I decided to become a church planter and you ruined my life. And I'm like, is it bad? No, you've also blessed my life, but you ruined it as well. So I'm like, oh, wow. Yeah. I don't know how to respond to that.
Oh, man. You know, I'd be curious in light of how we started this entire episode off, how many of our listeners actually listen to both you and...
That's a great question.
You and
I bet
you,
there's
Ed
like,
and Todd, yeah.
I bet there's like Summer of Paul, Summer of Apollos.
Yes, I think so.
It's sort of a thing. Well, because you're Todd, you're more multi-site and I'm more church planning.
Yep.
Yeah, but I think what happened fairly quickly was everything just started bleeding over.
Bleeding. There's been a lot of bleeding.
Into everything
there's
else.
A lot of bleeding. That's true.
It's been bloody.
All right. Mess. So on episode 600.
Yes.
And I think if we could actually get into this topic within 4 minutes, I mean, that would be a record. Because I remember.
I feel that was passive aggressive. I feel that that was passive aggressive. See, now that Daniel's officially installed as the pastor of that megachurch up in Edmonton, Beulah Alliance.
It's like the largest CMA church.
Yeah, like, well, I think actually the one in Calgary is larger. But anyway, it's a large CMA church. True? Is that not true? Calgary, first CMA of Calgary, isn't that larger?
First Alliance is large. Yeah. I mean, I have no idea with COVID and all
that's
that.
Where,
right?
So. That's where Stephen, what's his name, goes?
Harper.
Former Prime Minister. See, Canadian facts. You don't know those things, Todd. That's extra for you.
No, I don't.
But the point is, so now that he's a megachurch pastor, he's kind of being passive aggressive with us. And I like that. I receive that.
Okay. No, you know what? We're not going to go there. So there are two questions that we are going to answer on today's episode.
Two, not
the
one.
First one.
The pressure's on.
The first one is, well, I got you guys for an hour. So this is,
it's an hour, I mean,
this
long
is gonna be awesome.
Podcast.
No, it's not.
It's not an hour.
Wow. No one wants to listen to an hour. You know, I just did Carrie Newhoff's podcast and it's like an hour and 15 minutes. He's like, oh yeah, that's normal. I'm like, are you kidding me?
Yeah. Except you can't say no one wants to listen to an hour long podcast because his podcast is nuts.
Well, you know, Joe Rogan's, not that I listen to that, but it goes on forever. You know, just, these are long. I guess I feel, we let's go an hour.
Okay, so I want to get into these two questions. The first question is, and we alluded to this in the last episode that Todd and I were on, is what is the difference and how do you tell the difference between what a trend is and a fad in regards to church multiplication? Okay, so we've been going at this for 5 years. I mean, Ed, your history in church multiplication, and Todd, you too, I mean, goes back decades.
Decades, so, maybe centuries, maybe centuries, maybe yeah. 7 or 8 decades.
So how do you tell the difference between a trend and a fad? And the second question that we're going to get to is all about the great sort. Who is going to come back and who isn't as we get things as the vaccine rollout continues to increase. All right, so let's start with the trends versus fads.
You mail if you say vaccines, I get mad about it. You got some people really triggered.
Hey man, I got mine. So all right, so trends versus fads, and then let's go to the great sort. All right, Todd, why don't you kick us off on the difference between trends versus fads?
Well, I'm excited actually to have this conversation with Ed because I can't even remember how it came up, but it was a couple weeks ago and we did an episode on it. And so it's not as fresh as I would like it to be in my head. But the conversation was around, you know, everybody is, not everybody, but we like to say everybody is talking about this pivot or massive pendulum switch and everything has changed. And the reality is there are going to be some things that change, and then there are going to be some things that are just fads or buzzwords or whatever of the day, and that caused a thought really about fads versus trends, because a trend is something that you can adjust to. It's at least going to last a couple of years, whereas a fad just seems like it's going to be overwhelming, or it is overwhelming, but it's short-lived. It's usually media driven or hyped in that way, and that especially in our day with social media. I mean, even terms like pivot, everybody knows what I mean when I say pivot because they've heard it. Or unprecedented times is now a joke or a meme. It's those types of things.
Yeah. See. Okay. So what immediately popped into my mind because I love this
Friends episode. The Friends episode when they're moving the couch. Pivot.
Yeah. Pivot. Oh, yeah. That's definitely a gif. Pivot. Yeah.
Sorry. Not that one. Okay.
So, okay. But what immediately comes to my mind is, yeah, you know what? Over the years. So let's talk, for example, and I don't even know, Ed, you're going to be the expert on this. But I don't even know if you could call the church growth movement a trend. But the reason I want to bring this up as an example is you have something like the church growth movement that still has remnants and is being reframed in different ways here and there still today, yeah, right? So for decades now. And then you have something like house churches,
yeah,
which seems, I mean, there is definitely a height of it, right, in the mid, early 2000s. And then there weren't a lot of books and not a lot of conversation in and around it. And in the last couple of years, it's just rapidly come to the surface again with the term microchurch. So yeah, how Ed, because you have a long frame having studied this for a long time, what are your thoughts on the trends versus fad side?
Yeah,
especially those two examples too.
Yeah. When you look at, you know, you kind of, those things are harder to distinguish than I think a lot of people would consider. You know, it's part of what you're seeing is that a trend is something that's basically a change in behavior or the way someone approaches, you know, whatever else it may be. But, you know, if you go back to 1970, it was a book published in January 1st, 1970. It was actually called The Emerging Church. And it's by Bruce Larson and Ralph Osborne.
There you go.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But it was about these kinds of things, like these house churches are sort of taking off and more. And so what I would say is, I would definitely say a move to smaller communities is a trend, but it's more of a counter trend. You see, I think a lot of times people think, like, I'm at Wheaton College and people like, is it a trend that people become Anglicans? Well, it is at Wheaton College, but it's not so much, the biggest trend right now inside, religious faith and practice in North America is to the move to large non-denominational contemporary churches with smoke machines. There's your trend. That's trend's been going on for decades. So the smoke machines, I added to that part. That's not normally a part of it. But there are counter trends. So I would say, you know, microchurch, the Tampa Underground, we're thankful for the underground movement, you know, these different things that we actually, you know, elevate and highlight in our different platforms. Mm-hmm. We're for those things, but they're not they're a counter trend to the largest trend, which is inside religion to large non-denominational churches in American culture or Canadian culture, now this is not true everywhere, but most of the West, the biggest trend is a move away from religion. So you've got like, you know, you got to think in terms of like layers. So the trend in the Western English-speaking world is to become nuns and move away from nominal religious faith and practice. Then those who practice, the biggest trend is to large non-denominational contemporary churches. But then there are counter trends to microchurch or to liturgical church. So what happens is, yeah, I spoke at the Anglican 1000 a few years ago. I said, how many of you used to be, the technical term would be low church Anglicans? And I don't remember, more than half the people raised their roof. So there were, you know, Pentecostals or Baptists or Wesleyans or non-denominational, and now they're Anglicans. So if you're in that room and there's, I don't know, less than, you know, maybe 1,000 people in that room, and 2/3 of them moved from a low church tradition into Anglicanism, you might see that as a trend because it's all around you. That's that trend. So I think a fad would be sort of a shorter term practice and more. So fad could be dress. You know, I remember speaking at the Advance conference in North Carolina years ago, and I said, listen, don't you come showing up, you know, to your rural church in North Carolina wearing your plaid outfit, thinking that you're going to, you know, carry in your man purse and sort of yell at everybody about the need to know the gospel better. You know, you got to love the, you know, so that was a fad. It was like, I want to be like these Seattle grunge is kind of a fad, or, you know, I would say wearing Hawaiian shirts was kind of a fad. But I do think trends would certainly be, using Rick Warren as the example, the faddish thing. He doesn't even wear Hawaiian shirts now. I think he disavows them on purpose because it became faddish. But certainly Rick Warren was a part of setting a whole trend about how churches did leadership, how they did discipleship. That's a trend. So that's the distinction, I would say, between the two. In church multiplication, I think that you know, early on in the 80s, when Bob Logan put out the church planning toolkit, and it was like people started talking about the large launch. I mean, that was kind of a fad for a while. It's not a fad now. It's a trend. It's what most church planners do. And yet there are some who follow a different counter trend, which is, you know, maybe microchurch or mission incarnational communities. I think those are how I would distinguish the two, if that helps.
Yeah. So would you say that every trend started as a fad?
Yeah, I don't know. You know, it depends how you define fad in the full sense of the word. But I would say that you don't know if it's going to be a trend. You know, it's a few years ago, I was talking about my denomination, and it's, you know, I made the controversial prediction 10 years ago that my denomination was about to enter into a protracted period of decline. It was actually more than that. It was 2007 or so. And people got so mad at me. I said, it's going to decline for decades. And if current trends continue, it could be half the size within a few decades. And my whole article was, my whole point was, the people were saying, well, it's a one-year thing. It's a one-year decline. And I'm saying, no. You're missing the trend. The trend is percentage growth year to year. And in the 50s, it was 4% growth. In the 60s, it was 3% growth. In the 80s, it was 2% growth. In the 90s, it was 1% growth. And then it got to 0% growth in the 2000s. So what happens next? -1, -2, -4. So I was trying to explain to people that one blip of decline was actually a decades-long trend. And so it's kind of hard. You know, it's and my article was literally called A Blip is Not a Trend, but the Trend is Here. So I think that's it's kind of hard to tell. What I would say is, if it makes substantive change in the way we do ministry and multiplication, but here's the thing. You kind of use the word fad and trend, and fad means, a fad to me is a bad thing. I mean, maybe it's not. I don't think Christians and missiologists should be chasing fads. So what I would say is, sometimes they're experiments. Maybe that's a better word, a word I like more. Maybe it's more of, we're going to try this. And I think having kind of an ecclesiological skunk works, where we can try new things, is a good thing. And some people might say, that's faddish. You know, cowboy churches a few years ago, was that faddish? Maybe. I don't know. Maybe. I don't know how many cowboy churches there still are. And I kind of take the approach is, I want missionary church planners to try things that may be different, so that we might see what kind of impact they have. And then we might really celebrate and pass on what they do to others.
Mm-hmm. And that's where I was hoping we would go, even with this I think, Ed, what you highlighted before in terms of that, the blip example and how trends, I mean, you don't really know. Like, you don't really know if it's going to be a trend or not until you take a look at the long view. And these days, I mean, investing in the stock market, there's such a massive growth in it because it's so easy for the everyday person to download an app or do it for free. Whereas before, you had to trust the investors, right? To the professionals. And there's just been this broad commoditization of stock trading. Now, I bring that example too, because it's like, it kind of gives you that sense where, man, I, as a church planter or as a pastor, can read the fads, I can read the trends, and I'm going to plant this church, or I'm going to grow my church rolling off of that or based on that. But really, I would say, for if you are listening in as a church planter or as a pastor and you're like, yeah, I want to multiply my church, what do I do with this information? You don't need to become an expert. What you do need to be, like, you don't need to become a cultural, sociological expert. What you do need to be an expert at is hearing the voice of God, is coming before the throne of Jesus and seeking his face for what he is calling you to and how he is calling you to incarnate his spirit and his presence in the area that you're at and to reach the lost there, right? That's what we need to be sensitive to. That's what needs to drive our mission, not the trends and fads. Now, those are interesting and good, but we can't let the cart go for the horse.
Yeah, I would say, I'll add one thing and then I'll be quiet because I think Todd's smarter on these things too. So here's what I would say too. One of the criticisms, rightful criticisms, of some of our more innovative and entrepreneurial church planners, one of the criticisms that I've received is that we tend to jump on every or many fads. And I would say that's a valid criticism in many cases. I think we need to think more about our gospel, how we communicate it, our ecclesiology, not everything that looks like, you know, not every time people meet together is at a church. I mean, so it can become faddish. On the other hand, I think that, you know, again, because I get criticism, I've criticized from places you would know, pulpits that you know, who say that, you know, for example, early on, I tried to ask the question, in the early stages of the emerging church, I wrote one of the early articles about three streams of the emerging church, where there's significant heretical elements of the emerging church. But I'm also very thankful that in what some would have said was a fad in 2006 and 2007, that I was actually working at the North American Mission Board, and they asked me to engage some of those elements of it, that some of those groups now that you would have called a fad in 2006 and 2007 are now global church planting movements that you might have thought was faddish, but old, and parts of it were heretical, people jumping on every theological wind of doctrine. But I think my job as a missiologist is to see the early inklings of what could be what God is doing. And I saw that in some places in the what was then the emerging church. And later on, things would sort of change. But that became a key thing for me, is to help to see. And the trend became, how do we engage what we'd call back then emerging postmodern culture? That I think is a good missiological trend.
I accidentally hit my I have something to say button. I was trying to mute myself. I'm sorry.
No, I was just like, Todd was just biting at the bullet.
Yes. So,
in other words, stop talking and let me talk.
No, I was trying to mute.
You're just muting me, because I get that a lot from people. I just need to mute. This is why we're only together one every 100 episodes. We can't do more than this. All right, I'm gonna stop talking now, Todd, because you can go from here. What do you think, Todd?
I am good to go on the trend versus fad conversation. The only thing I would say is, you know, it may end up, once it gets adopted by an older generation, like, I don't know how it becomes a trend once it moves from trend to fad. I think there's got to be some scalability in there, or a democratization of whatever that idea is, so that, you know, enough people can carry it forward, whether that's a book or a system or process or something like that. I mean, we talked about Rick Warren earlier. I mean, one of the beautiful things about that was it was something that you could understand. And so when you look at purpose driven, and I, you know, we both have spent some time in, or all three of us in Australia, and Ed, you've worked with some of the people that we have, and you look at the M's and you're like, this is you're all doing a lot of the same stuff as purpose driven ultimately. But at the end of the day,
yeah,
what it did was it gave somebody something that made sense to them. It was clear enough that you could say, okay, here's the basis, here's the five things, here's whatever. The problem with it was it allowed everybody to say, well, this is discipleship or this is evangelism. So whatever their pet thing was, they now had a reason for it and to keep it around and to argue yeah. for it. So
I like how you brought up this, like the scalability side of it, Todd, because the immediate thing that came to my mind when you said that was, will the future of this house church, micro church, like will that actually, do you think that'll actually be different today than, let's say, 15, 20 years ago when Lots was being written on it?
Well, Ed could answer that question way better than me, but even if I look at like Hirsch over the course of, you know, the time that I've known of him, I've known of him or read some of his stuff, it's interesting to see how that has, I don't know, morphed, shifted, changed. Ed, what would you say?
Yeah, I think people do. So, you know, there's always, you know, and we can talk about Alan. He'll probably listen to the podcast once if he knows. Yeah, I'm sure he's a listener every week, but you know, now he can.
Yeah,
because it is twice a week. I mean,
yeah.
So I would say that watching Alan and Michael is kind of interesting. When they wrote The Shaping of Things to Come, which really, you know, just in missiological circles was just widely engaged and embraced. Mm-hmm. You know, Michael, of course, is in Australia. He's at Morling, I think, still. And, you know, at Deep Sea, Big Boat, Big Sea, Little Boat, Big Sea. I forget what it is. I had a great time being at their 10th anniversary celebration. And I would say Michael continues to kind of speak prophetically about engaging the margins. And though, you know, Morling is not the margins, but he's sort of walked in that space, engaging marginalized people, where I think Alan has continued to do that. And simultaneously, I mean, Alan is, you know, having conversations with, you know, megachurch pastors, you know, Redeemers city to city contracted with Alan. So I think in a sense, Alan's innovations was many ways brought to the center. You know, I mean, you can't probably get a more influential church today than what Redeemer and Keller and all that sort of stuff. So whereas, you know, Alan could have been this wandering ecstatic prophet, you know, sharing his ideas and shouting mm-hmm. it from the corners, you know, he's brought into the center. And I think that's one of the things that good organizations do mm-hmm. is, and one of the things I've said many times is that that organizations that want to consistently be renewed need to be looking at the margins to see what God is doing, which again, I don't like the word fad, but that maybe ecclesiological experimentation, missiological experimentation, when that begins to, I don't think that organizations like mission agencies need to be like saying, okay, we found this idea that one person did in this one town, and now we're retooling our whole strategy. I can give you examples of that, and I can name names of denominations that have done that. It's been a disaster. But when they watch and they're like, you know, this has been a couple of years, and now there's three or four churches, or maybe six or eight churches, and there's some things we can learn here, then I think wise organizations bring that to the center, listen, learn, and distribute that learning and best practice across the organization so that multiple people in churches can be influenced. And that could lead, that could take what you might call a fad. I like an ecclesiological or missiological experimentation. See it as a trend. I would see it as a gospel opportunity that people are responding in fresh new ways to fresh new approaches, and then mm-hmm. to propagate that more broadly.
Yeah. Okay. So then, but for this particular example of within North America,
yeah.
Okay. Or within more of a Western context, do you think the future it's going to, in regards to house church, micro church, you know, what do you think the future holds in regards to that movement? Do you think it's different this time around? Because, you know, 10, 15 years ago, there was a lot of energy and conversation in and around it.
Todd. You complaining about me answering all the questions, Todd? He's muted. That's how much involved he is. He's muted himself. He's not even involved.
Yeah, now you're muted.
Wow.
Which, you know what? Which we are not going to cut out because everyone understands Zooming and muting.
Yes.
Oh, man. Wow. I'm that guy now.
You are that guy. You're like a 74-year-old man. So what is this mute button? What does that mean?
What is this?
So, Todd, what do you think?
Okay, so...
You weren't even paying attention. You weren't even listening to the question. You're like, oh, Ed's going
to
answer that.
I was listening to the question. Wow. It is
trading.
I think it's going to end up being both. I'm not sure. I don't trade.
That is such a bad answer. That's like, oh, it's going to be both. We're both. Everyone's right. Everyone's right.
No. No, we've talked about this on the podcast before. I don't know if Daniel brought up to you his well curve thing. He had read an article on the well curve, which, you know, the inverse of the bell curve.
Yeah.
And it is really intriguing to look at. The middle ground may be gone. It may be really small and really big.
Are you referring to really small churches and really big churches?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Micro churches. And then these really big churches and in some ways, I think you can already kind of see some of that happening. I know Ed was really interested in talking about in COVID, you know, what has happened, how have churches seen people come back or not back, or when is that going to happen? What stages it's going to happen in? I forgot the word that Ed used earlier.
Yeah, well, we are going to get there
in
a subsequent episode. Okay. You know, it's fine to talk about that later. No. So let me say that when it comes to the house micro organic, that yes. Part of the problem is, like all movements, are led and engaged by passionate people. Passionate mm-hmm. people overstate things, and so for 30 years that I've been paying attention to this stuff, you know, the house church, organic church, simple church, micro church have always basically said this is the future. You know, the established church is going to not last, and you know, and there's a breakout of this. There's a movement going on, and mm-hmm. and you know, I've done a lot of research in all these places over 30 years, and there's not been a movement the way we describe or see it around the world. Mm-hmm. So here's what I would say, though. I mean, that's kind of what the seeker movement said. That's kind of what the, you know, missional incarnational movement said. So you've got to sort of be on everybody's side and say, we're for you. And of course you think this is going to be the thing. If imagine if you're like, you know, I want to commit my life to something, but it's just one way of doing things. It's no big deal. So of course people are passionate. So what I would say is, but onto your question, will it be different this time? At some point, yes. In some places, yes. But again, people were asking me this 10 years ago. And what I would say is when there's downward pressure economically, when there's downward pressure legally, when there's challenges, you know, with large gatherings, when there's, you know, there's factors that create house church multiplication movements around the world that are not here in English speaking Western culture. Mm-hmm. And that's the thing. So I do think that if I'm running a mission agency, I want to support a significant, though not majority, of my church planning efforts engaged in simple, organic, you know, kind of rapidly reproducing small group kind of churches. So.
Yeah, good. Okay. All right. So let's get to the great sort, part two of episode 600. Who is coming back and who isn't? Should we talk about which one of us? Who of us have gotten our vaccines and our opinions on vaccines?
I'm just kidding.
Yeah, I'm happy. I'm sorting that.
I'm happy to talk about the vaccines. Did you get your vaccine, Todd?
No.
You haven't been vaccinated for real? Do you plan to be?
I had it.
You had COVID already. Do you plan to be vaccinated? That's what we all want to know on the episode right now.
I don't want to answer. I probably will have to be in order to travel to the places I need to travel. So. Yeah.
Okay. So yeah, I'm probably, not only am I vaccinated, and I know you are, Daniel, but not only am I vaccinated.
I'm half vaccinated.
Although halfway. Okay. Did you have a reaction to when you had the first one?
Fatigue. And I couldn't, my arm was in pain, but it was not as bad as others.
Yeah, so we're going to be not only do I think that not only have I taken it, but I also think that I'm going to be encouraging, you'll see my forthcoming article in a major secular publication, I'm encouraging evangelicals to get your facts on the vax, because we can put an end to this pandemic. So back to your bigger question, though, which I think Todd's going to answer first, and I'll weigh in, is who's coming back and when. Todd, you were doing some sort of thinking about this, so tell us who's coming back and when.
No, in helping churches like think about retooling for, you know, the great reset, restart, relaunch, whatever you want to call it. One of the tools that I ended up putting together was it was an old thing of Malfer's from Building Leaders, I think. And he used the analogy of a ship where you had stowaways, passengers, crew, and pirates. And so what I did with that was I put it into a quadrant, of course, and I said engagement is on one side, and then how much are you contributing on the other? And so especially during COVID, I think any contribution that wasn't in alignment with the mission and being on board is an act of piracy, because ultimately it's pulling away from what you really need to be focused on during this time. The big piece, though, was for churches to be able to say, okay, prior to COVID, what percentage of your church would you say were, you know, really on board with the vision and then actively, you know, contributing to the church? Whether that be financially and hopefully using their gifts and service to Christ there. When you looked at those things, you had stowaways, people that they really weren't on board. Maybe they came, you know, once a month and they didn't really contribute financially or anything. They were just kind of there. You had passengers who were on board, but they really weren't contributing. And then you had pirates who are contributing, but they're not really on board with the vision. They're just kind of doing their own thing, or maybe, you know, leading their own really big Bible study on Sunday morning, whatever it was. And so to me, I think one of the most telling things is if you do that prior to COVID and now, you know, wherever you find yourself now, a lot of churches, I think, honestly, Ed, they were measuring attendance, or they were measuring they were calling passengers crew, and they shouldn't have been doing that. They were saying, what was discipleship, you know, or what was truly on board, engaged, you know, maturing believers. I think now they know, because if you were a stowaway, you're gone. And right. If you're a passenger, you might be gone. Mm-hmm. And so were you able to cajole, you know, people that maybe had their own agenda, or maybe you weren't really clear, and that's why they were, you know, quote unquote, a pirate. You had a great opportunity during this time to align your poetry and plumbing and get things moving. And at least anecdotally, the churches that I've seen that have been most successful had a lot of clarity during this time, and they shrank down what they did, you know, their offering. And then, you know, after Easter got kind of a vitamin B shot, and they seem to be off to the races again. What I think is really funny is a lot of churches didn't skip a beat when it came to their finances.
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, now you know who your core of core are.
Yeah.
As well. So, all right. Now I want to hear.
No. We've already gone 30 plus minutes in this episode. So I am going to, I've got in my upcoming episodes, we're going to talk more about the great sort, which is actually more about people responding to social issues in the church. And I'll talk about levels of engagement and disengagement, which kind of, I really like your metaphor there. I think what people have to realize, and I'll just touch on this and then turn it back to Daniel, is that people have responded differently in your church. I talk about the front third, the middle third, and the back third. So the back rows, the stowaways, I think you call them, the back rows, I think, are mostly gone in most churches. And the question is, that back third, who were sort of in and out of the church, generally, you know, maybe considering, maybe not even believers, considering the gospel. I think those folks have disconnected and disengaged. And I think the big question will be, and I'll talk about this in a future episode, the big question will be, how do we reengage them in the fall of 2021? Because I think there's a short window that could be seized by people. You know, the stowaways, you know, what does it look like to talk to them about responding rightfully to the cause of Christ, to the gospel, if they're not believers? And I think we need to think carefully, wisely, and strategically about how not just we regather. A lot of people have focused on, well, you know, we're up to 50 or 60% what we were before. But this is, I think, a great evangelistic and perhaps a harvest opportunity that we want to seize as well.
Yeah, see, this is fascinating.
One of the reasons why...
Yeah, go ahead, Todd. Well,
let me say this really fast, sure, and then you can go. One of the reasons why I ended up putting that whole thing together anyway was to say, okay, you can get clarity on where you are and then go after some of those people. How am I strategically going to go after this group, this group, this group, and move them in this direction? Because also, Ed, I mean, we know just from people who were vulnerable or at risk, or maybe their you know, daughter was in a vulnerable category, those people may have been crew and were relegated to being a passenger, whether they wanted to or not, just by circumstance. So there's several different groups of people that we really need to think about engaging, or you're right, they may not ever come back. So
yeah, see, this is, so yeah, you're right. Thanks, Ed, for bringing attention to our time, and we will address this in future episodes and talk about it. And I love that direction about re-engaging them for the fall of 2021. Now, our listeners, you mentioned it earlier, where yesterday, at the time of this recording, I became lead pastor of Beulah. And that was, I mean, it was May 2 years ago when I was offered the position, not quite 2 years since I started. And right, so I've actually had more COVID services during COVID than non-COVID services.
Wow, that's crazy.
So succession is hard enough, right? This is the 100th year of this church. Keith, who I took the baton, who passed the baton on to me, had been serving for 30 years. So succession is difficult enough, but the fact that was then, you know, you got COVID thrown into that as well. For me personally, as I look at this question for my local congregation, it's so interesting because my energy and effort is not going to those who have left. It's not going to those who have been, you know, quote unquote, the stowaways, or those who have, the passengers who have left and boarded other ships and all that stuff. Really, my focus is, yeah, you know what? We have a core who have remained, who are passionate, who are excited. And yeah, how do we shape ministry? And I look forward to the conversation. How do we shape what the summer and the fall looks like so that they actually move from being passengers to crew to being the advocates that really, I mean, they are not just disciples, but disciple makers who can catalyze and re-envision ministry for this next year and onwards. So it's going to be good episodes.
Amen. We got good conversations coming up. Thanks for episode 600, Todd. It's good to see you.
It's good to see you.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. You'll see each other. I'll coordinate another meetup in
a 700th episode.
Yeah. We should do
this in 11 months. We live in different countries now. You have, I mean, in the 600th, the 500th, 500th episode, you were actually an American. Now you're not even an American anymore.
I was never American.
Oh, yes. Wow. 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 We're proud Americans here, Todd and Ed. Don't be talking. All right. America. All right. America.
No, I was never American. I was a Canadian living
in. Does Christina still say y'all?
Yeah, we still say y'all.
Does Christina still say y'all?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
I'm fixing to understand your speech better now. So that's Todd lives in Lebanon, which is
Lebanon, not Lebanon.
Not it's Lebanon. It's how they say it. It's how they say Lebanon. So, and that's out in where Cracker Barrel was founded.
Yes.
Do you ever go to the original Cracker Barrel? It's now a gas station right by, I forget where it is. Yeah, we went in there.
And those Cracker Barrel pancakes are awesome.
3 miles from that.
Yeah, you know, well, there's actually like this, it's a gas station now. So my daughters, when we were younger, they were younger, but I was younger too. We went to Cracker Barrel every Saturday morning. Me and the daughters gave, you know, Donna stayed home and we went out. And anyway, so one day we found out where the actual Cracker Barrel was, which is, it's right kind of in Lebanon, right by the highway. and we went to it. And you can clearly see it's a gas station now, but it's got that long porch in the front. So you drive up and you're like, okay. This was the original Cracker Barrel. So we walk in, but it's like not the best environment to bring your children in kind of gas station. It's kind of like, oh, we're selling all the CD products. So we walked in, I looked at the things on the wall and said, well, that's nice. See you guys. And we walked out. But we did go by and see the famous first Cracker Barrel.
Nice. Okay, quick question. Ed, were your girls more excited about the food or about the novelty shop at Cracker Barrel?
I call it a garage sale with food. That's what Cracker Barrel is, a garage sale with food. So we would play the little mind teaser game that's on the table the triangle thing. And we just hang out and it was fun, but they were not shoppers at that age. Then they became teenagers and I couldn't afford to take them to Cracker Barrel because they want to buy all the stuff. So.
Yeah. Yep. That is awesome. Well, thank you so much for listening.
Thank you, everybody, for listening. 600 episodes.
We appreciate it. Yeah. All right. And if you have additional thoughts. Let me say, though,
for those of you who listened to 300 episodes with Todd or 300 episodes with Ed, we appreciate you too.
That's right.
All with Daniel.
And just like a good TV drama where the season is over and there's many threads in which the plot can turn.
Yes.
You know what? If there are things that we talked about on this episode that you're like, okay, I know you're going to be talking more about the Great Source, so you don't need to send in a question about that. But if there are other topics where you're like, okay, you need to rewind, double click on that, zoom in, then just send that in at speakpipe.com/newchurches if you're on your mobile device. Or if you're on your computer, just go to newchurches.com and hit the sidebar on the right that says send a voicemail. All right. Thanks again for listening in, and we'll catch you next time.